Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel here in the wonderful Baseball America podcast nook, which Ronnie McCabe deserves kudos for cleaning up. Ronnie, the most veteran member of the Baseball America crew, former Richmond Braves clubby. So now his job at Baseball America will outlast the Richmond Braves, who are moving. And there's big news in the Richmond market, but we'll leave you to Josh Leventhal's Business Beat blog to check that out. That might be a separate podcast, JJ.
Yeah.
I believe today on August 1st, everyone wants to talk about the trade deadline, so it's a special edition of the podcast. We didn't want to wait till Monday. We'll do it on Friday this week to go over the trades that happened this month and this week, mostly this week. I don't think we're here to talk about the past, as Mark McGwire would say. We're not going to go over Rich Harden and CeCe Sabathia, although both those guys have been outstanding. I think that clearly those are the two best pitchers who were traded, and I think it's amazing that both those teams – made those moves early. Everything that moved yesterday, with the exception of a couple of relief pitchers, JJ, all the big moves the last couple of days centered around big bats, not big arms.
Hall of Fame bats. I mean, that's the crazy thing is that you are talking about yesterday, in the last 2 days, if you go back to Savon Rodriguez was the day before, but in the past 2 days, you saw three pretty much surefire Hall of Fame
first ballot guys.
Two first ballot guys.
I don't know if Manny Ramirez is a first ballot. I mean, I think
When you say it all done, he's 500 home runs.
Oh, I think he is. I'm just saying. I'm sure there's some guys who are in the protest
Manny
vote.
Manny being Manny,
exactly.
But
Ivan Rodriguez and Ken Griffey Jr. are no doubters.
And I think Manny Ramirez, when it's all said and done, is going to be a no doubter. I mean,
I agree.
And that's three Hall of Famers traded, and in two cases. Traded for not a whole lot. I mean, now they're a little bit further on in their careers, but Ken Griffey was traded basically for here, will you take some of his salary, and we want to give him a chance to play in the playoffs. And Ivan Rodriguez was traded for, basically a guy who a couple of weeks ago, Yankees fans would have been like, who? We want to get rid of him? Oh, yeah, go ahead. And
absolutely.
Now they're crying about it. But
I think most Yankee fans are still glad that Kyle Farnsworth is gone, even though he had a good month and a half. But Ivan Rodriguez to the Yankees for Kyle Farnsworth from Detroit, that one is, to me, easy win Yankees. Even if Detroit, is desperate for bullpen.
Yeah, it's baffling to me from Detroit's standpoint. Like, that just doesn't – it seems like, you gave up a whole lot more there than you got back.
I mean, I guess Detroit – honestly, I think Detroit you can't do this unless you just prefer Brandon Inge behind the plate than Ivan Rodriguez, which is kind of hard to believe that would be the case. But, Ivan Rodriguez has had a nice – after a really poor start, he's had a nice bounce-back season. He's actually walked 19 times this year. It's close to a 2,000 – an odds high for him. But their bullpen was struggling, J.J. Todd Jones down the DL, he's terrible. Aquilino Lopez has been one of their better guys this year. Zamaya's banged up. Fernando Rodney's not been good of late. They're using guys like Clay Rapata and Bobby C a lot out there. They needed bullpen help, so that's why they made the move.
It just still is a little baffling to see, basically,
the cost of bullpen help remains ridiculously high at the trade deadline.
And it also does show what the value of a guy like David Price may be, even before you get the great part of David Price's career, but if Jeff Samardzija can do this for the next couple of months,
right? Great
you're
point.
You're seeing the value of, if you have a guy in the minors, even if he's going to long term be a starter for you, if you can have him come up and pitch, in July, August, and September, pitch well in the bullpen as a seventh inning guy, it really does make a big difference because, heck, the cost of that apparently is, if you want to go out and get it, is basically a 13-time, all-star catcher.
Well, it's a huge – honestly, it makes me think that these clubs that go out and sign free agents, middle relievers in the offseason to what seem like outsized contracts, I usually think that's a bad idea. Maybe not. I'd rather give up the money, JJ, than give up a player.
I would agree with you on that, but here's the thing.
Excuse me.
Look at how many of the guys who were – at least rumored to be traded as far as middle relievers.
Oh, yeah.
How many of those guys were the guys signed to big money contracts, and how many of them were just winning
Kyle
by numbers?
Farnsworth.
Kyle Farnsworth was, but I'll give you Will Ullman. Will Ullman's not a big money guy, but he was high in demand because
You almost wonder, like, how high in demand. It's almost like he was too much in demand. The Braves could end up making that deal.
Which is fascinating, like, and from that standpoint, again, just some of the deals that don't get made are as interesting as the ones that do.
Or as surprisingly, the Twins not making a deal surprised me a little bit because Craig Monroe's hitting around 200 as a right-handed hitting DH, and their third base situation is still a little unsettled, and now they have Alexi Casilla get hurt. The Twins are still only a half game out in the American League Central. No one quite seems to know how. They've still got Francisco Liriano in reserve. He's coming up, it sounds like, the Lavelle Neal of the Star Tribune blogs last night that Levon Hernandez may have made his last start for the Twins, which I think a lot of Minnesota fans are rejoicing.
A wise choice, probably.
But they've also caught up Luke Hughes at AAA. But, you look at Luke Hughes in the Eastern League, I'm making Eastern League best tools calls. He's not necessarily coming up for best defensive player anytime soon, put it that way. He's sub-900 fielding percentage at third base. And, the Twins, I talked to a couple scouts in the Twins and out of the Twins organization at the Futures game, and that's the whole question. They want a right-handed hitter to play third base to complement Brian Buescher. He's in that mix. He's basically the top of that mix, but the defense is what's holding him back.
Are you
willing to
live with, fielding percentage that's Ryan Braun-esque?
The Twins do not. And the other thing is, maybe they put Brendan Harris back at third base. He's probably better suited there than in shortstop.
But the problem is you have to have someone to...
It's a pretty funky team. Well, Nick Punto could play shortstop. I don't know who plays second in that scenario. Or Adam Everett is back. He can play shortstop. The Twins fascinate me that they didn't make a move. One of the teams that did make a move, I guess, a team that made a lot of moves, it's Pittsburgh. Let's talk about Pittsburgh real quick, and then I'd like to talk about the Angels. The Pirates made two big trades in all this, JJ, and they picked up a lot of players, eight players, not all the minor leaguers, but in the Manny Ramirez to Los Angeles, Jason Bay to Boston deal, the Pirates get Andy LaRoche at third base, Brian Morris, a right-handed pitcher, and A-ball, Craig Hansen and Brandon Moss from Boston. And then in the trade they made earlier with the Yankees, they got Jose Tabata and three AAA right-handed pitchers, Ross Ohlendorf, Dan McCutcheon, Jeff Karstens. I think the consensus seems to be that they didn't make out so hot in that trade. We talked about that Monday with Ben Badler. I didn't think it was so bad.
I really do. I'm a little baffled by that from the standpoint that they got a prospect in that trade. I mean, you always say, buy low, sell high. They sold high on Xavier Nady. I mean,
correct.
Xavier Nady
and
is
Thomas Marte. Marte is getting right-handers out more than – by far better than he has for most of his career, so they sold high on him too.
Right, but Xavier Nady, just a couple of years ago, was a guy who was looking for a job, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a very average career up to this year.
So you sold high on him, and you picked up in return. I'm not saying, there's a good chance that Jose Tabata will never reach his potential.
Right.
However,
he's 19.
I think back, this is a terrible analogy in some ways, but I'm going to make it anyway.
Is it terrible or terrible?
Terrible.
We'll judge it.
A couple of years ago, the Rays, when they were doing their selling off, a couple of moves they made is they basically bought low, on Dionir Navarro, who was a top prospect at one point, who basically the shine had kind of come off of.
Yeah.
And they also, Edwin Jackson was about as good a pitching prospect as there was in the, in baseball.
Right.
And then he had tailed off, and there was questions about, is he just not able to do it?
Right.
And so they basically bought both of those guys. They traded for both of those guys when the value seemingly had diminished on them.
Correct.
And they were patient with them. And we've seen this year what's kind of turned out from that.
It's funny to hear people talk about Dionne Navarro as one of the better young catchers in the game, but I guess he is.
And he's still – and the thing that's fascinating is he's been around long enough that we forget
he's
really 26. Is young.
Yeah, he's 25 or 26. He's not yet to the prime of his career, or what should be the prime of his career,
that's
for sure. But
with Jose Tabata, you have the reasons that, he's not considered as fascinating a prospect maybe as he was going into the year.
Yeah.
Was he's had some, discipline issues where basically it sounds like, it's something where you don't want to write it off as, hey, he's young, but it's very possible that, hey, he's young.
That's right. Again, he's a teenager. He might just be in a case of him being a petulant teenager.
And then the other part is he's not hit for power this year. He's really not hit, at the level that they, that you would expect. But we have to remember with that, he's coming off of a hand injury.
Right.
And hand injuries are something that...
It's a hammock bone removed.
That happens, it sometimes takes... Now, sometimes it never happens.
Right.
But if it does happen, there are a lot of times where it takes, a year and a half, 2 years before you really ever get the power back.
And this really, and that's really the thing for Jose Tabata. I agree completely. The off-field stuff, that's a question you hope that maturity can solve. The performance, honestly, isn't even that awful when you factor in the hand problem. 248, 320 on base, 310 slugging at AA right now for a 19-year-old. That's not, it's not even acceptable even with his age. A 630 OPS is not acceptable.
Right.
But the power aspect is the big problem. And, you know, he had one awful month, JJ, and then since then he's frankly been pretty good.
And,
not great, but pretty good.
And people forget about, like, how serious that hand injury was because he played last year with it.
That's correct.
So when you even look at last year's numbers, and last year's numbers were, for the FSL, for his age, were very good.
Yeah.
But the question was he didn't hit for power, but he was playing essentially one-handed.
Yeah, he had the same hand injury in August 2006. For whatever reason, the Yankees did not pursue surgery.
And they kept for a while saying, oh, no, 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 he doesn't have a hand injury.
They wouldn't say anything about it for a whole year. Until he had surgery, they wouldn't admit it.
And
Chris Klein
reported
it for us. We reported it in winter ball when he had to leave winter ball in Venezuela early. So I thought the Pirates did okay in that deal. And then I thought yesterday for Jason Bay, they did pretty doggone good. They got an everyday third baseman in Angelo Roach. Now what that means for Neil Walker, oh well. To me, you just assemble talent.
And to me, also, it means with Neil Walker, you've got to do better than what you're doing before we can start setting aside spots for you.
That's a great point.
I mean, it's maybe I don't want to go too far on this, but with the year that Walker's had, you know, at some point it goes beyond having potential. You're up.
Yeah, he's got to perform.
You've got to perform, and
the higher you go in the big leagues, the minor leagues, the more performance matters. It's kind of hard to try to bank on a guy with a 266 on-base percentage in AAA. You just can't build – that's not a building block guy.
No,
that's a guy who's going to repeat that level or has to have a really good fall league and spring training to change your mind about him.
Right. You really are. Right now you're saying he's back in AAA next year, and he basically next year has to produce to kind of not just kind of fall off the radar somewhat.
But, they also got Brian Morris, like I said, Craig Hanson, Brandon Moss. Here's just a little thumbnail sketch I just did of their future lineup. I mean, future being kind of like now, like next week. I hope we're going to see Andrew McCutchen up soon. And I hope we'll probably see Steven Pierce, who is already up, I guess, maybe get some playing time. He's had a bad year this year as well. You've also got Brandon Moss in this outfield mix with those guys. And, of course, Nate McLouth is already their best outfielder, and he's an all-star. He's got all-around skills, not just a good hitter. We saw that throw in the all-star game, and if you've watched the Pirates at all this year and you've seen Nate McLouth, he plays very good defense as well. You have the LaRoches at the corners, which is a fascinating story in itself. Maybe Andy LaRoche gets off to a good start in April and May and then carries things until his brother wakes up, gets his medication right, and gets going. I mean, I don't mean to be flippant about his ADD, but this guy is a notorious slow starter. So you're kind of tied to Freddie Sanchez at second base because of the contract. He's had a brutal year this year.
Right.
But you would assume that the true Freddie Sanchez is somewhere between this year and the last 2 years where he was a 320 hitter.
So you basically say, okay, you're counting on him.
He should be
still
okay at second base. Jack Wilson's okay at shortstop. And Ryan Domit's kind of become a really good offensive player behind the plate. Honestly, I don't know enough about his defense to say whether or not he's the answer defensively for them. Remember a couple of years ago they had, was it Ronnie Paulino?
Yeah.
Who had this great rookie year, and he is just off the face of the earth. He has vanished. I haven't asked John Parado what happened. But, you know, Ryan Domit is slugging .556, so if he can catch, you're fine there.
If he's blocking balls from rolling to the backstop,
yeah.
If you're the Pirates right now, you have other problems to deal with before you deal with the catcher who's slugging .550.
He has the highest OPS plus on the team, according to our friends over at BaseballReference.com. And Paulino, who is still around after hitting .310 as a rookie, had a nice .263, .314, .389 last year, then .218, .287, .318 this year. So.
He
may be the backup.
But basically, what the Pirates have done, and the new regime for the Pirates, you got to give them some credit in that. It beyond everything else, the problem with the old regime with the Pirates was is that it seemed like the aspiration was to snap the streak.
Yep.
So
I would say that was true of both previous administrations,
right.
Both the Littlefield one and the Bonifay one.
Right. But it really was. It was to snap the streak. And so you would have – think about the difference if you're a Pirates fan right now compared to if you're a Pirates fan at this time last year. Now, I mean, admittedly, it's not easy being a Pirates fan, period.
Yeah.
But at this time last year, you're trying to figure out why you traded for Matt Morris.
That's right. That's right.
Compare that to now, and it's like, hey, we picked up – I mean, if you look at the Pirates system right now and compare it to the last 5 years, it's in the best shape. You know, they're no longer relying on bad draft picks that they've had to kind of keep pushing up the line because they were high draft picks.
Well, and the thing is they can't rely on those guys because they're all hurt.
Right.
Now they're all – Brian Bullington just got a save last night against the Durham Bulls, pitching four innings for AAA Buffalo. John Van Bitskoden with a nice 10 ERA in the big leagues this year. I think we can say that that was the wrong move. He should have probably tried to hit, not pitch. I know he's had these shoulder surgeries since that he can't hit anymore. That ship sailed, but that was the wrong move. But now the Pirates at least – I think they look representative on the field, JJ, for the next few years if the LaRoches are as good as they can be and if Ryan Domet comes close to this. The difference for them, I think, over the next couple of years will be on the mound. You know, Ian Snell and Tom Gorzolani have been awful this year, basically thanks to Jim Tracy and his pitching coach, I guess it was Jim Coburn last year, and Dave Littlefield flogging him and Snell last year, going to the whip late in the year to try to save their own jobs.
Right. It was like, okay, yeah.
Gross. Just gross. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, but it – they're still, I mean, let's be clear. There's the Pirates are still, the streak is still, you know, not in jeopardy for a while.
I think that a lot would have to go right for them to break the streak next year and avoid setting the record on their own. This year they'll tie the Philadelphia Phillies with 16 straight non-winning seasons. And I don't, losing seasons. And I think the other piece of this puzzle is that I don't think the pitchers from the Yankees, Ross Ohlendorf, Daniel McCutchen, Jeff Carsons, are necessarily going to be difference makers, but I can see in the next 3 to 4 years if the Pirates, if maybe some of these younger pitchers do develop better, Gorzolani and Snell recover their 07 form, and they're both above average pitchers. Zach Duke gets decent. Paul Mahalem keeps up what he's done this year. He's been very good for them this year. I can see McCutchen, Ohlendorf, and Craig Hansen being the back of their bullpen along with Matt Capps, if Matt Capps has anything left after he's also been flogged the last couple of years
and, if not,
and
I mean,
used heavily.
You might end up trading Matt Capps down the road to try to, you know.
Yeah.
I
think that was a good week for the Pirates.
They're a long ways.
But I think that I think it's hard to be a fan of the Pirates. And the guys who are your best players are always getting traded off. That would have to be dispiriting. Even if you see a good direction coming, I would be dispirited as a Pirates fan, even if I knew that it looks like there's better times ahead. You've been told that by Cam Bonifant. You've been told that by Dave Littlefield. At this point, you don't really have any reason to believe that it's better with Neil Huntington.
And the reality is that while this was a good week, the reality of it is that when this season's over, when we're doing our top 100 next year.
Yeah, how many of these guys are going to be in there? Not many.
Not many. But I'll say
Daniel Moscos won't be.
I'll say
Brad
this.
Lincoln won't be.
That's the main thing it comes back to, though, is that the Rays this year have shown there is no excuse out there for any team. Not that you're going to be good all the time.
Yeah.
But the economics of the game are now.
To have a
this
window.
Is not 19, you know, if you want to say that in 1995 they weren't there, it's not that way now. If you draft well, because
yep.
If you're bad, you're going to get high picks. If you draft well and you draft with the willingness, we're not talking to spend $50 million on a player.
Right.
If you draft with the willingness to spend $4 million or $8 million if you need to get the top talent in the draft, and then if you trade with the eye on not, hey, we're going to win 10 more games this year and get up to 81 games, wins, but trade with the idea of 3 years down the road, we want to be a 90-win team. The pieces are there for you to do that. The Rays have showed it's possible.
It's absolutely possible. And
without
really
spending
no
a lot of money.
And there is no excuse. Now, maybe you won't be able to keep Johan Santana when he blows up, but guess what? If you prepare, you can trade Johan Santana and not even get any really return for your big league team and still compete. I mean, the A's have done it for years. I mean, they could have kept competing this year. They chose to punt. That's a whole other podcast.
What? But the thing about it is that being bold is actually, you know, it always seems like there's a lot better possibility of success with bold than timid. And if you want to describe what the Pirates have done in the past regimes.
Oh, timid is one of the words, yes.
Timid is the word because basically, I mean,
Brian Bullington was a timid draft pick.
Right.
Brian Bullington. No offense to Brian Bullington, but he was timid. BJ Upton would have been bold.
Right. And the reality of it
Scott Kazmir that year would have been bold.
Right.
He was the best talent in the draft. If you wanted to take a pitcher, you would have taken Scott Kazmir. And look how much better off they'd be than Scott Kazmir.
But look how many years they went with, you know what, we're going to take the safe bet, who's closer to the, you know.
Yeah, Brad Lincoln, I wouldn't say timid, but he was the safe pick. Tim Lincecum would have been the bold pick.
Right. I mean, and we'll say hindsight's easy.
Yeah, but we had Lincecum as the number two guy in that draft. Hey, we had Andrew Miller one, so maybe we were wrong about that. But we were bucking the consensus a little bit there to have Lincecum number two. But there were a lot of people out there who thought Tim Lincecum was better than Brad Lincoln. We had Brad Lincoln really high. We thought Tim Lincecum was better.
To give another example.
They would be better off if Jim Callis had been running their draft for them that year.
To give another example.
That's arrogant of me to say, I know, but I'm saying it.
But to give another example, like you look at what the Orioles have done, you know, in the last year, and you know they're a long ways away, and they're in a division where it's going to be always tough, obviously.
Yep.
But they stop being timid.
Yeah.
And they say, you know what? We'll draft Matt Wieters. Well, and drafting Matt Wieters, you know, when the Pirates had, you know, you want to talk about being timid?
Yeah.
Drafting Daniel Moskos.
That was timid.
Is timid.
There's no offense to Daniel Moskos. He could be, I think, a very good big league reliever, but he should not have gone fourth overall.
But Matt Wieters basically is sitting in Double A right now, where the reality is that you would be saying next year he's our – not only is he our starting catcher potentially.
Yeah, he's our four-hole hitter.
He's our four-hole hitter, and oh yeah, by the way, we expect him to be an all-star.
Matt Wieters is also the best position player prospect in the minor leagues, if you ask me. And I could see – if you think out loud about the Orioles and you say a 3-4-5-6 in the future for them that has – Nick Markakis, Adam Jones, maybe Nolan Reimolds in that six hole. Matt Wieters is in the middle of that. Luke Scott maybe could move over to first base for you because he's a nice complimentary bat. Maybe Albrey Huff having a rediscover season this year is still in the mix there for them as their DH somewhere. All of a sudden, that team's interesting. All of a sudden, that lineup has got some depth to it. All of a sudden, if they even still have Brian Roberts, the left side of their infield's an issue, but the rest of their team all of a sudden looks pretty good even for next year. I mean, honestly, that's not far-fetched for me.
But also, if you look at pitching for them, you look at it, it's like, you know, they actually, even with, I mean, Adam Loewen, you know, basically going back to try the Rick Ankiel route, they still have some interesting arms in that system too.
Yeah, and that's, I think they lag a little bit behind on the pitching compared to the hitting because the hitting is a little bit more big league ready. They have more bats in the big leagues right now, but I agree with you. There's hope in that organization. I do think that the Pirates have more hope now than they did a week ago. I think Neil Huntington performed well under these circumstances. I still think if I were a Pirate fan, I would be dispirited, even if because rationally I would know all those
hopes
things.
Hopes went from 2% to 10%.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. It's the Baseball America podcast. J.J. Cooper and John Manuel with you. J.J., we haven't talked about Ken Griffey Jr. Let's touch on Jr. a little bit. We haven't even touched on Mark Teixeira a little bit. I think we all agree Mark Teixeira – good deal. Boy, the Braves are in total rebuilding, if you ask me now. They have to be.
Oh, I think if you look at it with the Braves, if they had not somehow had not managed to trade Teixeira, it would have been really a disappointing thing from the standpoint that this team is, you know, I don't know right now how they can, looking at it and looking at the rest of the division, it's not a, you know, an overwhelming division, but looking at the rest of the division for, you know, for 2009, next year will be, you know, not many people out there are going to be saying, hey, you know, you got to bet on the Braves because the Braves are always there. Well, they haven't been for a couple of years now, and that pitching rotation has to be rebuilt.
It's getting ready to be three straight years, and I think the Glavine-Smoltz experiment this year turned out as it should have been expected. Let's hope the Braves don't count on Mike Hampton next year since he won't be under contract to them. So basically you're looking at your rotation for next year, and you got Jar Jurgens. And question marks, because
Tim Hudson
might need Tommy John surgery. I know that's not 100% yet, but
we don't know if John Smoltz will be, you know, if he is, he'll probably be in the pen, but we don't even know if he'll be in the pen or retired.
Who's the sure thing after Jar Jurgens? There's no sure thing. I mean, if there's any more glaring indictment of the Braves' inability to develop pitching over the last 10 years, I don't know what can possibly be. They haven't been they're not the organization people think they are. They're still a very good organization at player development. Look in the field. Look at Yunel Escobar. Look at Brian McCann. And to a lesser extent, Jeff Francoeur. Kelly Johnson. They've got position players out the yin-yang they've developed over
the years. You still
they're
have to give them –
very good at scouting and player
basically,
development.
Basically, they're home – I mean, as far as a lineup, they're more homegrown than most.
Absolutely. They're still very good at scouting player development and growing their own players. They're just not as good on the pitching side as they used to be. No one's that good. No one comes up with Smoltz and Glavine and Steve Avery and Kevin Millwood and Jason Schmidt all in a row like they did. But they don't either. People still assume they do, and they don't. Now they come up with Chuck James. Now they come up with JoJo Reyes. And they come up with Charlie Morton. These guys ain't getting it done. They're not good enough.
I do think that when it's all said and done, you'll see that a couple of their young arms will probably end up developing something. I think Charlie Morton, he's been brutal this year.
Yeah.
He has stuff.
He does have stuff.
You know, where you could look down the road and say, okay, you know, we saw with Smoltz and Glavine and all them, the adjustment to the big leagues can be a difficult one.
It can be.
But
I'm not as optimistic as you are on old Charlie Morton. I'm definitely not optimistic on old JoJo Reyes. I'm not a JoJo Reyes guy. And I don't know. I don't know where, outside of Tommy Hansen, I don't know where the help comes for them. I'm sure Yankee fans will be disappointed that Matt DeSalvo is not the answer for Atlanta. I just don't think that they have a whole lot of in-house answers. And they're going to have to be bold. And this was not the Chera trade was not a bold trade. They got a first baseman back for their first baseman,
right.
Which I don't quite understand why they do that. I guess they don't have the trust in Barbaro Canizares, the former Cuban defector, to come up and have been their stopgap first baseman. I would have loved to have seen that, been given a shot, to be honest with you.
But and then moving on, you know, when we're talking about the Griffey trade, basically, the reality of it is when we first, I mean, the best way to put it is when we first heard yesterday, talk of a Griffey, you know, to the White Sox trade. And basically the question was, wait, whoa, what? And
yeah.
What was on it? Several reasons. One, so how does Griffey fit for the White Sox? Two, so who exactly would the White Sox give up? Because, I mean, there's no other way to put it. When you look at the White Sox farm system, you struggle to find names of, oh, well, that guy fits for someone.
You think of Holly Hunter in Raising Arizona telling Hi that she's barren.
I mean, you knew it was like, okay, well, they're not going to trade Pareda. They're not going to trade, you know.
You know, I thought of, like, maybe they'll trade John Eli. Is that who they dealt? Was it John Eli?
And the reality was that what became clear when the names came out there, I mean, is
it was a money deal.
It's basically, you know, hey, we wish you good luck, you know, Ken. We want to get you on a team where, you know, they have a playoff chance, yeah. and they'll pay part of your salary, so yay.
Yes.
And that's basically what it was.
I think it was smart for the Reds to turn the page. I also thought maybe Juan Uribe would be involved in that because he's like an extra piece for the White Sox, and the Reds are desperate at shortstop, but his contract expires at the end of this year as well, so it really wouldn't have made sense for the Reds. They do get Danny Richar and Nick Massett. Those guys could both be complimentary players if the Reds are good in the next couple of years. But, boy, it's an end of a kind of a sad chapter for Ken Griffey Jr. because his Reds career was so just underwhelming. It just never worked out for him. And he was just a dominant player in Seattle. He aged like a normal player, A, which is great. But, B, it's just sad that he never was at his best in Cincinnati, it seems like.
WLW, the big one in Cincinnati.
Big right-wing one in Cincinnati.
But was airing snippets from when Griffey was, you know, brought to Cincinnati and you know, all the fans talking about
the last time
how many
Jim
World
Budden
Series.
Was thought of as a bright young executive.
And it is. It's like, I was kind of surprised. I mean, the reality is that Cincinnati didn't turn the page even a little bit more.
Yeah.
Although, I understand, like, with Griffey, you trade Griffey even if you basically are getting 10 cents on the dollar.
That's right.
Because you're not going to offer him arbitration at the end of the year. I mean, people say, well, what about the draft pick?
You don't want
you're not going to offer Griffey arbitration because he might take it.
That's right.
With Adam Dunn, maybe you do keep him if you don't get an offer you really like because the thought of bringing Adam Dunn back 1 year on arbitration doesn't sound all that bad.
He probably won't
take it.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't take it, you get the picks.
You do wonder why, you know, there's just a disparate – they're two – opinions on Adam Dunn are just so disparate, JJ. People either love him or hate him. Gosh, it seems like the broadcasters in Cincinnati and a lot of the fans there hate him, and the stat heads love him. Certainly the truth is somewhere in between. I don't think he's as useless with all those home runs and walks that people think. I also don't think he's as valuable with all the walks. He doesn't defend.
He can't run
the bases.
That's the thing is that like his on-base percentage is not the same.
That's right.
As if Juan Pierre obviously is putting up a
three. It's not even the same as like Brian freaking Downing. You know,
right.
Like if he were Brian Downing and like that good of a base runner and those kind of things, even as slow as Downing was, you know what? He probably would have been leading off.
But that being said, it also seems true that when you have a team that disappoints, and the Reds have disappointed,
no doubt,
what ends up happening is that the ire for the disappointment doesn't get focused on the
Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, or really take a step. It's not, well, we don't have really a good catching situation.
Yeah, exactly.
What it gets focused on is the best players and what they don't do well.
Correct.
And that's what's, I mean, I think, you know, you are talking about basically a guy who still, I mean, they're not, when he leaves, they're not going to have a, you know, Jay Bruce is great, but they're not going to have that power hitter who just immediately, you know, is battling for the home run crown.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no doubt that there's going to be a significant downgrade no matter what they do with Adam Dunn when you go 243, 385, 567. Just to put it in perspective a little bit, his OPS plus is 143. Ryan Domitz is 144. I mean, I'm just saying, I think Adam Dunn is a really good player. I don't think he's a superstar. I don't think he's a 3- or 4-hole hitter on the championship team. I really don't. I think he's a 5-hole hitter. He swings and misses too much, and you know, he's 13 doubles, 32 home runs. I mean, he just is hitting .230, .243.
He's basically, if you wanted the closest equivalent to him is the closest I can think of to what he does was Mark McGwire in the later years of his career, where basically
he's like Mickey Tettleton to me. What he's like.
You could hit it out.
Yeah.
You could walk, but I mean, it's the amount of singles and doubles that, you know, come with it is,
that's right,
amazingly few.
It doesn't mean that he's not really good. I can almost see, though, where you wouldn't want to pay him $15 million a year and make him the centerpiece of your club, because I really don't think that his profile is championship caliber cleanup hitter. I don't think I'm crazy to say that. I don't know how I ended up on the Cole Haan website, but I really don't think I'm crazy for saying that. Do you think he's a championship caliber 4-hole hitter?
No, I don't think he's a 4-hole hitter. I don't think
that's the thing. So you're, I think he would have fit great, like, for the Angels in between all their hitters.
Yeah, but once
Mark Teixeira fits better,
right? No, I you know, and I understand what the Rays saying. Hey,
right,
we're not going to do it this way because the reality of it is that, you know, we would, the Rays sitting there makes some sense, because they're basically, what they're essentially hoping for is that Rocco Baldelli can be, you know, a piece.
That's right.
That would be almost as good as anything they could have gone out and traded for, but without him having to spend anything to get him. I mean, the Rays are a year ahead of schedule here.
Right. So, I still think they have to, like, go for it as much as they possibly can go for it. I don't know if Justin Ruggiano, Rocco Baldelli, and David Price are going to put them over the hump. I think the Yankees, I do follow into the groupthink, I guess, a little bit, of where I think the Yankees really improved themselves. It's very iffy for Boston. I think Boston may be better for the regular season. Now, have you heard about this Sean McAdam story as we wrap up the podcast? Where Sean McAdam of the Providence Journal wrote a story that apparently Red Sox veterans met with Theo Epstein on Wednesday after their game. And I think Theo called the meeting, but they basically conveyed to him, you need to go ahead and get rid of Manny. Do what you have to do. Manny Ramirez has become a cancer, basically, in this clubhouse.
To me, I can very much see why they made that trade. I will ask you this, though, as we get ready to wrap up. We know we're going a long one here,
yeah,
but it's trade deadline day.
It's trade deadline. Why not?
But with the Rays, so what would have been, you know, beyond maybe picking up an arm for the bullpen, and not a,
yeah,
you know, really, they didn't need a Brian Fuentes even necessarily, but like, just,
right.
But what would have been the move to make?
I guess my point is, if they were holding on to Reed Brignac and that maybe not wanting to deal, hesitancy over dealing Reed Brignac is what kept them from getting Jason Bay, I think that's a mistake. I like Reed Brignac. I don't think he's a difference-making shortstop. I think he's a good shortstop.
We obviously don't know if that's true.
Correct,
or not.
Correct. And, for example, if they didn't get involved with the Braves or didn't try to get involved with the Braves on the Teixeira deal, if what the Braves wanted back were pitching, again, I think that the fact that you have AAA pitchers who are ready for the major leagues, like Jeff Niemann and Mitch Talbot, I think those are pretty good trading pieces. On Xavier Nady, for example, I would rather have Jeff Niemann and Mitch Talbot than anybody else in that Yankees deal, with the exception of Daniel McCutcheon. I mean, I think Ross Ohlendorf's a reliever. I think Talbot's got a chance to be a fourth starter. I mean, things have to come together for him, but the Rays had pitching to trade,
which
I'm surprised that they didn't make any deals.
They had pitching to trade without affecting their long-term. The reality is that for them,
they saw Jason Hamill was a guy they could have dealt.
For
it
them,
doesn't affect their big league team. Really.
For them, Jeff Niemann, Mitch Talbot, you can go on for several other guys if you're projecting out, even with a couple of injuries, because
yeah,
it's always going to happen, pitching injuries.
Yep.
You still, like, Jeff Niemann is a starter. He can't relieve.
That's right.
He can't warm up quick enough
That's
to
right.
relieve.
He physically
that
can't
being
do
the
it.
Case, you don't really project out that he will ever be a starter for them.
It's a shame because he annihilates right-handed hitters. He'd be a great middle reliever, but he just can't
you
warm up
You have to
quickly.
Basically be a guy who you say, okay, well, you're done
we're
in the fifth.
In,
we're
exactly.
bringing you in to start the sixth.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Which is a little tough to do. That kind of hamstrings your bullpen a little bit.
It'd be kind of neat if you just piggyback the guy at the big leagues for four innings and he was the piggyback guy. But they're going to hold on to Jeremy Hellickson. They're going to hold on to David Price. If you trade some of the other guys, they're probably going to hold on to Wade Davis.
Probably.
You know, guys who are they could get rid of, guys who they could trade. Heath Rollins is a guy who's attractive to some teams. We already mentioned Talbot. We already mentioned Niemann. They have other pieces.
James Hauser.
That's
Alex
right.
Cobb.
They have depth.
Their pitching depth is the best way I would jokingly, when we were talking around the office about it, I said, you know, like if they were interested, you know, in kind of that middling level guy, you know, in a trade, I would be willing to go to them if I was in their team and say, okay, you block out 10 pitchers.
That's right.
From your minor league system that you will not trade, and can we pick number 11?
Yeah.
And I'll do that trade.
Just about. You could just about do that with them.
I mean, they have that much where you're not talking about a sure thing, but they have enough pitching that you could say, well, that number 11 guy, you know, he has a chance.
Heath Rollins or Chris Mason, those kind of guys. Those guys might be down number 11 on their depth chart. Josh Butler, who was a high pickup. Well, you know, Chuck Tiffany, obviously having trouble throwing strikes coming back from his injury. But Mike Wlarczyk, they have guys. It's not like they're going to be needing to replace the Kazmierz and Garzas and James Shields anytime soon in their big league rotation. And you know David Price is part of that future. So you want to have depth, but that's what part of the reason that you have depth is to make these kind of trades. So great podcast, JJ. Enjoyed doing it with you.
Trade deadline day, always fun.
Trade deadline day was pretty tepid. I'm glad we weren't live on the air waiting for trade deadlines. I will also say kudos to Ken Rosenthal and kudos to John Heyman for scooping the rest of the dot-coms out there, especially ESPN, which is on the air, and those other guys are first, and ESPN's kind of last on the Manny Ramirez trade, which was a little shocking considering how how Bostonian and how New England-centric ESPN is. So that was another fascinating part of trade deadline day, was watching the new media era and how it reacted to trade deadline day, but that's a whole other show, I think, JJ. So for JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll wrap up the podcast, and we'll see you next week on the Baseball America podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.